Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, Very Mod. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 27, 2021. A senior South Sudan government official pleads with world leaders at the UN General Assembly.
As a national leaders, we admittedly have occurred mistakes that may have disappointed our friends, supporters, and the world. We have learned from those mistakes.
And a leader of a young men and women in Lagos State has been arrested in Juba for ignoring court orders.
I opened a case against Ziyu because he took my sister, who is someone's wife. He claimed that one child belongs to him and he wanted to conduct marriage arrangement with us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior addressed the 76th United Nations General Assembly last week, pleading with world leaders to understand the situation in her country and the challenges facing the implementation of a peace deal signed in 2018. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Washington.
Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior told the UN General Assembly on Friday that on July 9, 2011, the people of South Sudan emerged from a long liberation struggle against oppression and domination. Yet, less than 3 years later, Dimabior said, the country collapsed into another war triggered by a power struggle among our leaders.
Under the revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan, that was realized through the support of the UN, AU, and key friendly nations. While our determination to fulfill implementation, to implement the provision of the agreement, has been impacted by many challenges, foremost of which is a global COVID-19 pandemic outbreak and the limited resources needed for its implementation.
Dimabior admitted there has been a lack of essential services and development in South Sudan, as well as the international community's disappointment with South Sudan's leaders during the last 10 years of the country's independence.
As a national leaders, we admittedly have occurred mistakes that may have disappointed our friends, supporters, and the world. We have learned from those mistakes, and I am here to engage in constructive dialogue with our international partners, bearing in mind the lessons and consequences of our actions, and more importantly, the dreams, aspirations, and marching order from our people of the kind of government, society that they want.
But Dimabior says her government is committed to achieving lasting peace and development in South Sudan and to never again allow the country to return to war.
I want to assure our friends and partners that we are determined to never go back to war. We pledge to pursue the promises our liberators made to our people. We must ensure peace, security, dignity for all without distinction. We must replace the destruction of war with the productive use of our vast natural resources and national assets for good of our people.
The Vice President reminded the gathering of world leaders that they promised to help South Sudan at independence. Dimabior said her nation needs help in capacity building and building institutions, not just humanitarian assistance.
We should recall that at our independence, the international community pledged to help build the capacity of our infant country in all areas of nation building. As a result, the United Nations mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, was created to help establish the foundations of our new nation. However, after the outbreak of war, that vision was abandoned and priority was placed on protecting civilians and providing humanitarian assistance. As a result, support for capacity building of the state was terminated.
Dimabior said while humanitarian assistance remains a priority, the international community should do more in terms of capacity building for South Sudan. She said her government has made some progress in implementing the 2018 peace agreement, including forming the executive and legislative bodies at national and state levels. She says her government has also made progress in implementing public financial management reforms in Chapter 4 of the peace agreement, has started the constitution-making process, and is carrying out Chapter 5 on transitional justice, accountability, reconciliation, and healing, although at a relatively slow pace.
We can therefore say that the glass is half full in the implementation of most chapters of the revitalized peace agreement. Where the glass remains half empty is in Chapter 2 on a permanent ceasefire and transitional security arrangements. There is an urgent need to form a unified professional army under one command and control. The security sector reform is the most challenging part of the agreement.
Dimabior also used her speech to highlight the impact of this year's flooding, which has ravaged large parts of her country and affected hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese.
Climate change has already impacted the lives of at least 1 million people across South Sudan. Torrential rains have resulted in the worst flooding in 60 years and have inundated villages and towns and destroyed livestock.
And Dimabior expressed concern about recent developments in the Abyei administrative area, where Sudan requested the withdrawal of the Ethiopian peacekeeping contingent as tensions escalated between Sudan and Ethiopia over a border dispute and Ethiopia's Grand Renaissance Dam.
Khartoum has called for the withdrawal of the Ethiopian forces in the United Nations Interim Security Force in Abyei. Any alternative arrangements will take time and leave a dangerous security gap in the area. This issue can be resolved peacefully through an arrangement that will give Abyei people their freedom and dignity. Moreover, that will enable them to play a positive role at the border between the two Sudans.
Dimabior says being one of South Sudan's vice presidents gives her hope that her country can still correct its path and fulfill the dreams of its founders of achieving peace, prosperity, and dignity for the people of South Sudan.
I have come to this assembly with the spirit of my late husband, Dr. John Garang Dimabior, and all those who paid the ultimate price in the struggle. It was a dream for Dr. John to liberate his people and address the global community at this very podium. Being here as a female vice president from an independent South Sudan realized Dr. John's dream.
She said a dream of her husband, John Garang, the founding father of South Sudan, was to liberate his people and address the global community at the podium where she was now speaking. But being there as a female vice president, Dimabior said, was also a dream of her husband's. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A South Sudanese minister reacts to a United Nations human rights report on his country. That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you promote tourism within your country amongst your fellow citizens?
By sponsoring or organizing trips for schools and others, because there are some people who don't have money to go to such places.
Telling people about how our culture and history is, through that I can promote.
By having friendly activities available, like affordable costs of travel, food and accommodation.
Maybe by posting on the social media about the tourism activities happening in the country, as well as the places that people can visit places I know, such as some in Mangochi, maybe in Mulanje, by putting that on the social media.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The South Sudan government has denied accusations by the UN Commission on Human Rights that South Sudanese political elite are undermining human rights and endangering the country's security through diverting huge amount of money and other wealth from the country's public coffers and resources. South Sudan's cabinet minister, Martin Elie Lomro, calls the allegations a political campaign against South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
The UN Commission on Human Rights says South Sudan is suffering from a human rights crisis of epic proportions. The Commission submitted its report to the UN Human Rights Council last Thursday. It said investigations carried out over the past 2 years found out that South Sudan's leaders diverted more than $73 million since 2018, including transactions worth nearly $39 million in a period of less than 2 months. The Human Rights Commission said $39 million US is only a fraction of the overall amount looted from the country's national treasury. South Sudan Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elie Lomro denies South Sudanese political elite are involved in stealing public funds and calls the UN report a negative foreign campaign targeting President Salva Kiir's government.
An international campaign out there against this government, against this regime change. These are the organizations that are sponsored not to see stability, political stability in South Sudan. And they will move from one thing to the other. They'll move from one thing to the other, from human rights to corruption, from corruption to something else.
UN Commission on Human Rights reported it had uncovered a systematic illicit diversion of state resources, which has severely undermined economic, social, and cultural rights of citizens. This plundering, the commission says, also continues to fuel political competition among elites and is a key driver of the ongoing conflict, violations, and serious crimes jeopardizing the prospects for sustainable peace. Lomro says the UN Commission should publish a list of names of the individuals it accuses of stealing public funds.
all these people they're accusing, let them be fair and publish the list of the individuals so that these individuals can free themselves, clear themselves the way I've done it. This organization must be taken to task and to prove to us to publish the names of those who have embezzled the money and the accounts of those individuals and the countries where these individuals have embezzled this money.
The report says South Sudan's elites have deliberately adopted a highly informal system of oil revenue collection in which the absence of independent oversight and transparency facilitates and enables the misappropriation of public funds. It says similarly flout non-transparent processes for contract payments, procurements, and revenue are operated illicitly to divert non-oil revenues. In one case, the commission said a single illegal payment made in May 2018 by the Ministry of Finance to Sudanese businessman Asraf Said Ahmed Al-Kadnal, also known as Al-Kadnal, represented a staggering 21.6% of South Sudan's total 2018 fiscal year budget for, quote, the use of goods and services and capital expenditure, end of quote. Yasmin Suka, chair of the UN Human Rights Commission, said corruption, embezzlement, bribery, and misappropriation of state funds by political elites is merely the tip of the iceberg. Her statement said the commission's investigations traced exactly how the money is being diverted. She said the patterns of the embezzlement involve politicians, government officials, international corporations, military personnel, and multinational banks. The report also said South Sudan's Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning and the National Revenue Authority were complicit in the embezzlement, a claim Lomro denies.
Someone will tell you there is nobody supervising. And who are you to tell us that? This country is sovereign. This country has a government, and the government is responsible holistically to take care of the political independence of its people and to manage the resources of this country. If the government has mismanaged anything, it's only the people of South Sudan who can hold this government accountable, not external forces.
Measures included in the revitalized 2018 peace deal aimed at addressing corruption and other challenges weakening the country's economy have yet to be implemented. As for naming names, the UN Commission on Human Rights says it identified several individuals allegedly linked to human rights violations and economic crimes, and that it included those names in its confidential list that it will turn over to the High Commissioner for Human Rights. The High Commissioner is expected to carry out transitional justice, including investigations and prosecutions in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, authorities have arrested a youth leader from Lekki State for allegedly taking another man's wife along with his five children. The chairman of Ural Youth Association was arrested in Juba last week after a court in Bor issued a warrant for his arrest. The complainant says the youth leader dodged the court summons for about 4 months before being arrested. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Complainant Gong Nyongriak says Diu Marial eloped with his sister Amir Nyongriak from Nairobi without the knowledge of their family and took his sister and her five children to Irul in November last year. Riak says his sister was already married to South Sudanese Tuom Lwenedit, a lost boy who is currently in the United States.
I often a case against Ziu because he took my sister, who is someone's wife. He claimed that one child belongs to him and he wanted to conduct marriage arrangement with us. But how is that possible? Amir has not divorced her husband, and that was why her husband's family accused us of marrying her off twice. They arrest my father and my brother. I want Ziu tried in a court of law. That is why I brought him here.
Speaking to South Sudanian Focus by phone from Bor Town while in police custody, Diu Marial says he was picked from his office at the Ministry of Health in Juba last week and taken to a local police station where he was tortured and later transported to Bor Town. Marial says he wanted to be tried in Juba's court instead of a Bor courtroom because he fears the court might be influenced by the complainant and his family and fail to deliver justice.
My arrest was just came abruptly because it actually was a kidnapping because I wasn't sworn, so that I just followed the procedures of being sworn by the court. Some, you know, policemen came and then they tricked me, just get out of my office, rescue in Gomba Chirkat police station. But what happened again that night at 3 exactly, 3 a.m. in the morning? And then they just came in and started beating me, you know. Then they forced me into the car again. That's how I find myself involved, you know. I'm claiming my right of going back there.
Mayor Mo, a member of the Youth Council in Lagos State, says Brigadier General Aywin Nyongriak, an administrator with the South Sudan People's Defense Force, grabbed Marial in Juba and forced him into his vehicle and drove him to Bo Town last Tuesday.
Marial was taken by a certain Brigadier General who is working in Bill Farm. He is called Aywin Nyongriak. He uses rank and arrest Mathieu and took him to the police station in Chirkat, and then he collided with the police and Mathieu was brought out and beaten at night, and the same Brigadier General bring his private car and driven Mathieu to Bor Town. This is kidnapping.
Mo is urging Jonglei state authorities to return Marial to Juba, where he says proper legal procedures will be followed.
We want Mathieu to be brought back to Juba together with the General Ayuan, and then we go to Yerulid and bring the wife, and the court should be solved in Juba because we have our local court in Juba here. That's all everything from each state. They are here in Bor, they have court in Chirkat. From here in Lagos State, we have that court in Newside. Why would they not use these courts to try Mathieu and so that the court convicts Mathieu?
Riak says Marial was summoned by the Bor County Court on June 4th. He says Marial defied the court order and went into hiding.
He wanted to dodge us because he asked the woman and the kid with him in Yerol. He was summoned 4 months ago, but hid himself. We were given a warrant of arrest by the court. I found him in Juba last week and had him arrested and brought to Bor by court directives. I did not kidnap him.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Joseph Mayena Akon confirms Marial is in Bor and that Marial is facing a case related to his marriage, in which the complainants General Ayuen and his father Nyongriak file a case in Bor. Akon says the Bor police summoned Marial to appear in a Bor court and answer the charges against him, which he failed to do.
The procedures that is used by the in-laws was wrong. He was summoned, but the summon did not take the right procedure. The summon was supposed to be taken to the attorney, and then the attorney is the one to order the arrest of this guy. But the order of arrest was not taken to the attorney in Juba. That was the wrong procedure. So we need our people to use the right procedures when they are given the warrant of arrest. They do not take law into their hands.
Akon insisted that Marial is waiting for a Bor County Court Judge, Deng Akui, who has been in Juba, to handle his case.
He is under our care. He's staying with us. He's waiting for the judge but to come from Juba. So he's okay. He's healthy. There's nothing affect him. Only in Juba, he was abused. He was beaten by those who caught him inside Juba.
General Akon is urging relatives and colleagues of Marial to stay calm, saying the youth union leader is being well taken care of while in police custody. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
September 27 is World Tourism Day. The United Nations says global tourist arrivals have decreased by 95% in the first 5 months of this year. UN predicts a loss of over $4 trillion to the global GDP by the end of 2021. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, the hospitality sector in Kenya suffered massive job losses since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Tourism continues to suffer extremely under the COVID-19 pandemic as climate change severely affects many major tourist destinations, particularly small island developing states, where tourism accounts for nearly 30% of economic activity. United Nations World Tourism Organization says the pause in international travel caused by the pandemic has negatively affected the tourism sector. Zurab Pololikashvili, Secretary General of the World Tourism Organization, said that tourism is slowly recovering across the world.
Tourism can help our societies recover from the impacts of the pandemic, and it can deliver hope to those who need it most. In many parts of the world, tourism is slowly restarting. As it does, we must make sure that nobody missed out. Growth must be benefit every part of our diverse sector, from the biggest airline to the smallest family business, and from the largest cities to the smallest rural communities.
As of May 2021, the number of tourists that arrived in Africa from overseas added up to around 1.04 million, which was significantly higher than the 533,000 international tourists who arrived in the continent in May 2020. In Kenya, the government is struggling to boost tourist trust in the country after the effects of the pandemic. Diani Hospitality Owners Association Vice Chairperson Bobby Kamani said that the border shutdown made most of the tourism industry players rely on alternative markets.
Whilst the UK had shut down earlier this year, it taught us to rely on the Eastern European market, taught us to rely more on the domestic market. So we've opened up new source markets, but we're just glad that we're getting back one of the traditional source markets.
Before the COVID-19 pandemic, the global tourism industry contributed $9.2 trillion, amounting to 10.4% of global GDP. A Kenyan conservationist, Jim Nyamo, says many tour companies and hoteliers closed down.
We've never had this before, and so we've seen so many tour companies, hoteliers closing down because they have never experienced this before, and perhaps they didn't even have a backup project or backup budget for that. And so the lesson that most of our tour operators have learned so far, and even as conservationists, is we need to have an account called a reserve account in the event of any calamity.
Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. Send us your brief comments and we will air them every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Monday. Still leave you in Kenya with Jamnazi Africa and the song Riziki.
Mahali Mungu alipanga usiku saya kulala, mbona walimwengu mumebadili mipango? Usiku sasa imegeuka mchana, na mchana sasa ni kama usiku jamani. Yeah. Mi nashangaa.
We've been listening to Jamnazi Africa and the song Riziki. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're out in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Tafuta usiku kodi za nyumba mnatafuta usiku biashara nyingi mwafanya usiku chai kwa mkate sasa mauza usiku mahindi choma sasa mwa...